Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss, Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss. The Brothers.
You're now listening to Greg. It's the
Hey, everybody. This is Greg and Colin Zapolak. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, we'll go with Zapolak.
Zapolak. I like that. It sounds more country. We are doing Colin's top five tips today. He was nice enough to jump on. And for anybody listening to this, I want your top five tips as well. Submit them and then jump on a video with me and let's talk about them. So, Colin, where are you out of?
Basically DFW Metroplex.
All right. So he's down here
a couple hours away from you.
With me. He's one of the good old boys down here. And you are a WISP, right?
Well, I put myself through college at being a WISP. And or helping out a WISP operating out in Lubbock. I'm one of those fine people from Lubbock, Texas
when it comes to
university choices.
Lubbock, what's in Lubbock? Nothing, right?
It's actually a great place to learn RF because it's flatter than hell. And the only thing you have to worry about is we don't really deal with rain fade, and we don't really deal with any other kind of issues, but we do deal with dust fade.
Interesting. Yeah, as you said, flatter than hell. I was thinking you have to drive through hell to get to Lubbock, right? It's that bit between Central Texas and West Texas right there.
Oh yeah, the Cap Rock.
Yeah, there you go. All right, man. Well, let's get rocking and rolling. Tell us about your number one tip.
Well, let's see. I have to go back and look at now because
it's
been a couple of days.
I'll read them to you. You said look at things in terms of a link budget. That was your number one tip. Why is that?
Yeah. So that's really I found it's a lot easier to look at things in terms of a link budget. So essentially, if you don't know what a link budget is, you sum all of your gain, so your RF output, your gain for your antennas, and you know it's going to be your gain for your transmit and your receive antenna, and then your look at it, subtract that from your loss for the path, and you see, I like to try and shoot for 30 to 20 dB margins. That allows for some rain fade and other things, but, I actually, full-time, I work in the public safety two-way industry, so I do a lot of traditional two-way.
So you're doing, trunk units on police cars and stuff like that?
Yes, and I do, I specialize in Motorola's trunking systems, but which a lot of people run are in the Texas. There you have two big networks. You have TX1 and Gators, and they're kind of each of them covers about a third of the state respectively right now. One's owned by the city of Austin, one's owned by Harris County in the city of Houston. So it's just one of those things, but your weak link's always your uplink because you're talking typically they want it in for portable coverage, so it's 3 to 5 watt portables. So you want and it's like, well, yeah, I can, there's a lot I can do with 100 watt repeaters, running 9+ dB of gain on the antennas, but the portable's the limiting factor. So let's I always reverse my link budget for the uplinks from instead of the downlink from the repeaters, but the uplink to the repeaters. And I've found that it makes life a little easier because you just kind of look at it in terms of your margins and phase, because it's like, so what will it change? How will it change my numbers? I know that this shot's this much loss. How will it change my numbers, or where do I need? What gain antennas do I need? Because, gain, nice thing about gain, it's both receive and transmit that it works. So, it's kind of been handy that way, looking at it like that. And it kind of rolls actually right into the next one. And this is essentially right out of the two-way industry. But, it's part of how RF works. But you need a a 6 dB delta to actually notice any kind of notice, make a noticeable difference. And, you know, in the RF world, the way RF works, 6 dB typically signifies a you change your power by your effective power by 2. And if you look at it, you know, power actually changes by every 3 decibels. So you have, you know, you want to double your output power, it's a 3 decibel difference. But to actually notice that change, you have to change things 6 dB. And for every 6 dB, you change your coverage by a factor of 2. So if you increase your, if you want, say you're going shooting 1 mile, the difference between 1 mile and 2 miles is 6 dB and of loss. So you have to overcome that extra 6 dB. There's between 100 miles and 200 miles, 6 dB of loss.
So you're saying when you double distance, you need to account for 6 dB
in all those calculations. Yeah, and typically, what I like to say is, people typically increase their output 3 dB, and it's like, well, you've only added 3 dB to your link budget. It's really not a noticeable number. So that's kind of how I like to look at it. Or another one is, you know, if you narrow your transmit power, or I mean, not your transmit power, your channel width, that's only going to be, if you half it, that's going to be about a 3 dB effective change. So either need, if you want to really make a noticeable change, either, and you could be right on the fringes, but you might also need to do a bump power 3 dB or something. And it really depends on the radio, because there are a lot of wireless radios out there that are really wide on their front end filtering, so they won't really notice too much if you just cut your power by, or your channel width by half.
All right. And so let me retrack on the first one. You said look at things in terms of link budget, and what I got out of that was you said kind of look at the smaller side when you're talking about your link budget, right? So you were talking about the trunk units as opposed to the tower, right? So I'm guessing the police cars are going to have smaller antennas, and they're going to have less output power, right, than typically, the transmitting yes. tower. And I guess in a WISP, it's probably the same, right? If you've got a big, high-gain, powerful sector as opposed to the little CPE you're going to put on somebody's roof, you need to look at it from the CPE's perspective, right?
Yeah, and, you know, you're just looking at it. I mean, we deal a lot – dealing with mobile coverage is a lot different than fixed infrastructure,
yeah.
like you see with CPEs and mobile. But, you know, like I've got a 34 – 36 mile link that I'm still in the process of installing on 5 gig. It goes from basically Round Rock to Nolanville, so basically just outside of Belton. And it's
that's a relatively hilly area too.
Oh yeah, but I'm on one tower I'm up at 320 feet, the other tower I'm up at like 420.
Is the 421 in Round Rock? I would assume, because it's...
No, that one's actually out in Nolanville. It's on top of the hill. Great site.
I was trying to make a weed joke for Austin. It just didn't work out.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've got to shoot closer to Austin, and that one's going to be... See, that one's right at 420, I think, actually, in reality. And it's got an elevator on it.
You're doing 5 gigahertz shots? Is that what you said?
Yeah, that's
and you're not running into too much interference?
You know, it depends on which portion of the band I'm using. Unfortunately, Spectrum, formerly Time Warner here in Texas, has pretty much trashed the band because they put, you know, all the DFS bullshit on all their little home routers. So, but I think I found a nice little couple of 20 meg slices that I can use, and you know, I'm just passing. I think I need to pass like 60K worth of data.
Oh,
and I said K, not so. And right. I'm just like, if you know, I wanted to build a gigabit, but 300 megabits plenty. I'm never going to use it all.
Oh, fair enough. That's good. That sounds cool. So let's see, what kind of gear are you doing that with? Is it just
I have a thing against Ubiquiti. We'll get into that a little later.
Everybody's got a thing with somebody.
Yeah, I mean, and this is just for my time spent in West Texas. I mean, the WISP, the WISP guy I worked with in college, he loves Ubiquiti. He uses them for everything. He's an old school canopy guy, so he's really fond of the air fiber stuff, which I don't have a problem with air fiber. But no, that one I'm using Mimosa B5Cs, and I'm using those, what are they, plus 34 or are they plus 36 DBI dishes from Elcom.
Nice.
They're, three footers.
Big boys,
something like that. Oh yeah, they're pretty big. Right. I didn't realize how big they were until they showed up. No, they're four footers. I'm sorry, they're four footers. And my wife, she's like, "What are these massive boxes in my foyer?" Oops.
So are you the guy that has to actually climb and do the install, or do you have people for that?
I can. I don't typically do it, but this was for a customer who's an SMR, or actually a friend who's an SMR, and it's just T1s are outrageous. $300 a month for a T1, basically. And we're in locations where, oh yeah, you can get cable, but it's going to cost you $20,000 to build out. Okay, we'll do microwave for two
and call it a day. So. Yeah, easy. That's an easy decision. All right, man.
Yeah.
So let's truck over to number three. You've got follow basic grounding practices. R56 is a good reference. So tell me about that.
Well, so R56 is actually a Motorola reference. And if you wandered around the amateur forum, you see I already amateur topics on the Slack. I'm occasionally posting some Motorola stuff because that's pretty much all I do is Motorola, and so I get a bunch of Motorola junk. I call it junk. A lot of people think, oh, that's high quality stuff, we can't afford it. It's like, a lot of the stuff I've been given.
It's the leftovers.
It's rare if I pay for a radio. Yeah, it's very rare if I pay for a radio. And Motorola wrote this massive grounding spec. R56, you can download it online, but it's like 857 pages of goodness.
Wow.
The binders they ship are literally a good 3 inches thick. It's just...
That sounds very old school.
Well, it goes into a lot. It actually goes into the science behind, grounding and doing rings and everything, but when I say basic, essentially if the equipment's got a place to ground, use it. Ground to the tower. Make sure the tower's properly grounded. I've actually had some issues with that out in Lubbock. I was listening to one radio station, and we were working on doing backhauls, and I started driving the guys in the pickup, and I'm listening to a station that's, it's the next channel over, but I got out to one point on the guys for the tower, and so probably a 300-foot tower. And all of a sudden, that radio station that was actually there, that tower just started bleeding in. I was like, he's got grounding issues. So, it's basic grounding, and this is really my kind of irk with Ubiquiti and the Air Max line is, the canopy engineer or the air fiber guys are former canopy engineers, and Motorola is very big on grounding. Whoever designed Air Maxes, I don't think they know what grounding is. like my friend, he's running. He likes Ubiquiti, and so he runs that up there. But he's got a couple of sites where, for one reason or another, he can't keep radios out because they just keep dying. It's electrostatic discharge from all the dust in the air. And easy way to fix it is just to shunt it to ground right at the radio. But Ubiquiti doesn't have that option on the equipment he's using. So
gotcha. So if your gear doesn't have the option, I mean, that's obviously a no-go. But say, for your example, you were talking about going on a tower that didn't have good grounding. I'm assuming that wasn't your tower, right?
No.
So have you ever broached that with somebody that owns a tower? I mean, I guess if you're paying tower fees, there's expectation that it's going to be.
This one's the brother of the Wisp. He owns the radio station, and all his backhauls are fed over barracks boxes now instead of the dedicated STLs. So it's like, oh yeah, we need to fix this so your stuff stops going down. All right, because you know those broadcast guys, it actually costs them real money when they go down because they can't air customers. They can't air their paid advertisements, which means, oh, you paid for this, I have to pay you back. So some of those guys, you know, they're for every hour they're down, it's like $20,000-$40,000 in the drain.
Dang, that's crazy. I was listening, or I was maybe listening to a podcast or something. They were talking about like NPR stations, and there's a requirement to maintain your status, you know, to be like a broadcaster, like a local. So like here in College Station, A&M does like what is that, NPR and all that stuff, and if they are off for X amount of hours, they'll like lose their license or whatever. So I guess it could be fairly detrimental to your business if you have problems like that.
You know, and they're all advertisement based, is how they make money, is off at like regular TV stations. They make money off the advertisements. So you know, if they're not running ads, they're not making money, kind of thing. And you know, if they're not using the spectrum, then somebody else will take it.
Fair enough. So I like your number four a lot. You say plan for outage.
Yeah.
I think anybody who's done this long enough, what do I say, no change window goes unpunished, right? It's something's going to go wrong every time, without a doubt. Just hope that it's going to be something small. So when you say plan for outage, usually what I do is I assume it's going to a window or a procedure will take X amount of time. I'll double it, you know, just on the assumption that I know something's going to go wrong. It always does.
My assumptions typically, it's going to go wrong or it's going to break, and it's going to break at the most, you know, the worst possible time. Like we had I was up in Austin during Hurricane Harvey, and you know, we didn't see much up there from that, but we did see a lot of high winds. And what we were seeing is, I got a call that day, and one of my contacts is like, "Yeah, we keep going in and out of site trunking," which for in the trunking world, site trunking means you simply can't contact, you know, your WAN connect or your LAN connections down. You can't reach your adjacent sites. So it becomes a free for all because there's, you know, all this stuff. The databases are centrally located, so if you don't have any connection, it's like, well, instead of just kicking everyone off of the site, it opens the site up to everyone, and it creates some issues or some opportunities to allow the riffraff in that you don't need, especially if somebody's got some rogue radio IDs out there. We typically just, you know, try to avoid that. But the problem with that one was, it was, I think, a 10-mile shot. They're, you know, up in the licensed 6 gig area, and so they're using 6 foot dishes for 10 miles. Receive signal levels like -38. Signal level, and it's like, it was just, you know, extremely hot. But because those dishes only have a degree and a half of beam width, what was happening is it wasn't the freestanding tower, it's the guide tower on the far end, which it was oscillating in the wind, and it was shaking the dish. And you know, dish was firmly affixed to the tower, but the tower was shaking. So it kept breaking, and you know, and it was one of those things. It'd go down for a couple of seconds, come back up, but of course OSPF takes like 5 seconds to reroute. So it was So it kept, oh, I'm back up. You can stop rerouting. Oh, wait, I'm down again. Start rerouting. Geez. Oh, no, I'm... Yeah, and it did that for probably about 6 hours straight. And during this time, I have had a lot of people just like, we don't know what to do. And I was like, well, I can't. I'm just going to unplug it. You know, and force it into side trunking. I hate doing it, but it'll at least get it stable on you. And usable
for sure. Yeah, you said it'll happen at the worst time. That makes me think your smoke detector, the battery only runs out at midnight, right? It never happens at 3 in the afternoon when it's convenient.
Yeah, pretty much how life goes. Or you know, and it's just you always have the most odd failures, like oh yeah, we didn't have a lightning storm, we just had a... No, I'm just back to that. It's one tower in Lubbock. Yeah. Static discharge. Apparently, it can vaporize about 10 feet of UTP or STP.
Wow.
About 10 feet of it.
That's some serious discharge you guys have out there.
Yeah, well, dust and plastic housings, you know. Unfortunately, it's just situation, and you know, I liked it out there because you learn all these oddball things that you don't see anywhere else. And so it's like, well, you know, if I can build something to survive out here, it should last, you know, in normal conditions forever.
That's crazy. I don't know, man. Everybody's got their own interesting adventures. It reminds me of like JJ. He was telling me how he was building some of his first towers, or he was getting on some of his first towers, and he was building out there. And they had these really big, convenient shelves for him to put his radios on. He's like, this is great. I don't know why anybody else doesn't hang their stuff off here. Well, then the winter hit. Yeah, there were ice bridges. Yeah, so apparently ice builds up and then falls down the tower and will shear anything off in its way. So they build these nice bridges to break that. Well, he lost some radios. And then he learned really quick. And so it's funny, I was talking to one of my first consulting customers a million years ago, and I was telling him that story. And he said, yeah, we don't have to worry about ice. It was a dude in South Africa. He was like, what we have to do is worry about baboons. He said they love climbing the towers and just ripping stuff off. And, oh, man, it was such a watershed moment. Like I felt so tiny in the world. You know, I'm sitting here talking to a guy, and I said, are you serious? And he goes, this is Africa, you know. And it just, that stuck with me, you know. This, everybody, every environment, they've got their own interesting bits of things they've got to deal with.
The ice hurts. I mean, Tech's got a 600-foot tower in one of the parking lots for their radio station. You know, every time it freezes, they say, you can't park in this parking lot. It's going to start dropping ice soon.
Jeez.
And, you know, it'll drop a couple hundred-pound chunks of ice. But the real ones you have to watch out for in West Texas are the wind turbines. Because they'll ice up, and then they'll throw, you know, 200-300-pound chunks of ice. They can throw that a mile and a half.
That's insane.
Yeah.
I guess,
and that's why when it starts freezing, you see all the vanes will feather and they'll stop spinning. But when they start up, if they're not careful, not all the ice is melted, and they'll start up and just shooting. And it's like slow motion watching it happen.
That's bananas. That's crazy. I wonder if they like one tower or one wind turbine ever takes out another one with a big chunk of ice or something.
One of my friends' houses was about a mile from one. We woke up, you know, in this freshman year of college. We'd been out hog hunting the night before. We got up and, we didn't get up. We were woke up by a huge just crash, and about 10 feet from his door, you know, a blade had thrown a chunk of ice, and it just landed right in his backyard. So we might want to go to town moment.
That's bananas, man. Stuff you never think. Well, I mean, stuff I've never even contemplated having to worry about. Don't they say that those wind turbines like Ginsu up birds all the time too?
don't know. I can imagine. I mean, those blades in a 40, 45 mile an hour wind, those blades are spinning at like 300 or 400 miles an hour almost.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. They're booking.
All right, man. So let's move on to number five here.
Last one.
Document what you can.
Yeah.
I like how you say what you can. Not document everything, but what you can. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, you can't, sometimes you don't know how to put it into words, and sometimes you can't really put it into words, but
like, you know, when you duct tape something together, is that what you're saying? You're too ashamed to write it down?
No, just you write down that you did that, but you don't have to go into details. But my big thing is, you know, there's just one of me. I might not always be able to fix it, especially if it's a 300 or 400 mile drive just for me to get here.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, I might, you know, I was telling one of my friends down in San Antonio this morning, well, you know, I need to, I was like trying to get caught up on some stuff. And I was like, no, I'll give you the information that you need. And, you know, because just because I built it doesn't mean you can't dick with it. I try to document, you know, at least at a very minimum, I'd say try and keep a track of IP addresses and passwords and, you know, logins. You know, I don't know if most of us are still probably using the default admin as the user.
So do you make like a centralized repository for this stuff, or you just share it as needed, or what do you do with that?
One of my former managers, he got me into doing an Excel spreadsheet with, you know, you have your network and then you have your sites. I know my friend up in Lubbock's using IP plan to run all that stuff. And, you know, but if it's something you're going to hand around to a lot of people, it's a spreadsheet, probably easy enough.
We started using Google Docs for a lot of stuff. I know we still use IP plan as well to take care of our big public blocks when we hand out and stuff like that. But man, I like just the Google Doc because I can be in there. I can just like when we do our show notes, everybody's in there looking at it, you know, making notes.
Tell me about that. My full-time, they're just... They haven't adopted something as efficient as Google Docs yet. So we can't do that kind of stuff with it because somebody's editing it. So.
Make do with what you got. I get it.
Yeah.
And I think that's, and I still know a lot of people that are on Excel, and I still use, well, I've transitioned most of my stuff. Basically, I took my Excel spreadsheets, copied and pasted them into Google Docs. So it's, I didn't do anything groundbreaking or anything, but it's just so convenient to be able to share that crap around. And I could just send a link to the pertinent people or give them access. Read only most of the time, you know, so it just makes it very quick to reference that stuff. I like that a lot.
Yeah, I think the only real issue I have personally with Google Docs is sometimes it's a pain to get, go through the submission of requesting access. It's kind of a pain sometimes, but other than that, there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Colin, it's late and I've eaten up enough of your time, man. So I don't want to burn any more down. If you want people to get a hold of you out on the internet, is there a method you want them to do that? Yes or no?
LinkedIn's probably the easiest, or you can email me at Colin, C-O-L-I-N at Zaptcom, Zaptcom.net.
Nice.
So
excellent. Well, I sure appreciate
really
your time.
Best place to get a hold of me.
And another place you can find this kid is on the Little Brothers with Slack, man. Active member. proud. Yeah, you got the stripes. Remind right there on your me arm, of I see.
I canceled my carbs, so I need to update the Patreon.
Cool. Well, I appreciate it, man. Well, thank you again. Yep. And I'm going to edit this joker and get it up. And for everybody listening, if you have any questions or comments, Colin gave you a method to jump in there. If you have any of your own topics, submit them to us. Contact us at thebrotherswiss.com, man. Let's get you guys on here.
Yeah, submit them. I'm only the second person so far, so.
I know. Come on, man. Call them out, brother. It's like Ice Bucket Challenge, but way cooler.
Yeah.
And it doesn't help charity, so I guess it's not that cool, but you know, whatever. Thanks, guys. Networking. We talk about equipment and methodology, so sit back and start learning. Lighting up the tower so people can start searching. Shooting up the web in neighborhoods, net surfing. We got horrible jokes, we're loud and annoying, but we're informative facts, we're not disappointing. Just give us a listen, because fun is the mission. I'm telling you, you don't know what you are missing. Ideas and some good comedy given. If you missed the show already, don't worry, you're forgiven.